Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio. I'm here today with farmer and scientist Claire Sullivan from Brooklyn. Hello, Claire.
Hi, Severin.
How's it going in Brooklyn for you these days?
Pretty good. We are, of course, busy at this time of year. And we'd like it to stop raining.
Would you mind describing to our listeners what you're growing on your roof and what your experience has been so far this year and in the past years?
Sure. So we are Feedback Farms. We're a small operation in our second year of growing. We're not growing on any roofs this year. Our model has been to try to access land that's vacant and then to put in raised beds. And some of that, we've developed a model for a mobile raised bed because sometimes the land that's vacant in the city is maybe only vacant for a short period of time, say 2 or 3 years. And there may be a developer with plans to develop it. And so that enables us to invest in our soils, but still use that land while it is available. So this year we have two locations that are our main growing spaces, and then a small collaboration with Nightingale 9, which is a restaurant.
And what background did you bring to this project? What is informing your decisions as you're designing this engagement with the urban farming?
So we have a very diverse group of people in our farm. I work at Columbia's Earth Institute in the Agriculture and Food Security Center. So I do a lot of very rigorous scientific research on agriculture and agriculture and environment interactions in the tropics. And then the other main farmers on the project are Thomas Halloran, who has done a lot of farming in the rural context, and then came to New York and is a software developer. And then Gregory Sigorka, who is also a software developer. And Tally Winkle helped start the project. She worked in a number of urban agricultural projects. So the four of us, I think, brought an interest in experimenting with different methods of growing in the city. And we were trying to do something. We've been focused not so much on roofs and more on trying to figure out ways to grow in these other kinds of spaces. So we're interested in, like, testing different crops for the city, testing different software tools and technological tools for managing these decentralized spaces. I think that's where you see our different backgrounds and kind of research and software, and then also
it's so wonderful. So the feedback that you're getting in your work from the community, from your own team, clearly you're still doing it, and you're interested in the results that you're getting. Tell us about the feedback.
So one of the neat things about our two main growing spaces is that they're really integrated into community gardens. And I think that's just a neat part about urban agriculture is there's so much interface with the communities around the spaces. And so we've been sharing a lot of our results. We've been doing trainings on different bed designs that we've built. Just last week, we partnered with a bedside campaign against hunger and built these one of the beds that we've tested is sub-irrigated planters. So we built these small sub-irrigated planters, and then they went out and delivered them to different community members that they work with. And we did a training on using the sub-irrigated planters. So it's part of their kind of food security outreach that these different that people will put these little sub-irrigated planters in their backyards in bed-sty. So I think right now we're doing just a lot of, like, volunteer hours and workshops and just interacting with the gardeners in our spaces and with other people that live around them.
Let's explain a little bit. What is a sub-irrigated planter?
So a sub-irrigated planter is... it is a bed that has a reservoir beneath the soil that you fill with water. And so there's always a reservoir of air below the soil. You fill that with water, and then that water is pulled up via capillary action by the plants that you're growing. And so we've found those. So you use usually a lighter weight soil medium than people might be growing in. They are a little bit more kind of labor-intensive to put together than a raised bed and a little bit more expensive, but we did a trial of them last year and found them to be highly water-efficient and quite high-yielding relative to your standard wood raised bed.
And what are the disadvantages of... what are the disadvantages to farming with such input-intensive bedding medium? Or how do you...
Well, you really have to... You do have to invest a little bit more in the bed when you're starting off. It's not the same kind of, like, capital-intensive, skill-intensive thing to put together as, like, a rooftop farm, but certainly... You frequently, gardeners in the city will rely on, like, a topsoil donation from the Parks Department, and you do need to have a lighter soil than just, like, a topsoil compost mix for that capillary action to work in the planter. So you're going to have to...
So beyond discovering what really works in terms of your farm and how the... And how these planters are working, like managing the water inside each sub-irrigated planter during the summer and trying to figure out what your water needs are and gathering data for your own use. Do you feel like there's cross-applicability for the kinds of tools you're building to help farmers monitor field results for things like trials of cover crops or more climate-resilient practices? Do you feel like that's the outcome of your project that you're designing towards?
Severin, I couldn't hear you very well. I think it was something about the outcomes of our project and their applicability for others. Is that right?
Yeah.
One of the main outcomes was that they were much more water efficient, and so that saved a lot of... One, it saved water, which is just that's like environmentally great, but two, that also saves a lot of labor for a gardener, and then they were almost twice as productive for the crops that we tested. So one of the things, for instance, this bedside campaign against hunger event that I talked about, that really appealed to them, and they were targeting elderly gardeners that they worked with because they thought the sub-irrigated planters, one, they had very, very small space available for planters, so they can do that. They can get a higher yield in that small space, and two, they it's a little bit less labor for the gardener. So I think there's interest in both of those findings.
And then, so you guys have designed a set of monitoring tools that it feels like could be repurposed or adapted for use in other contexts. And as someone who's really interested in, well, because of FarmHack, interested in kind of distributed farmer-driven research, I like immediately see Feedback Farm's platform as potentially useful for doing like field trials and studies by farmers in, you know, adaptive management or, you know, more resilient kinds of farming as we look at climate shifting. Does that feature in your...
Yeah, that's something we're going to work a lot on this year. So we would love to have, if people are interested in working with us on that, we'd love to have people get in touch with us because we really want to try to create some sort of like a toolkit that makes it easier for farmers. All these farmers, all these small farmers are doing all these interesting kind of small-scale trials, thinking through their systems on their farm. And so we want to make like a little toolkit that helps people do that a little bit more systematically, collect that data and put that data together in a way that they can interpret the findings. So we're really interested in that this season.
So as you guys are looking forward and people are hearing about your project, are you getting offered more land? Do you have thoughts about how much time you would need to be assured access to land that would make it worthwhile for you to set up your system?
We have heard about lots of different land opportunities, and this season I think we're just going to work on the spaces that we have, but next season it sounds like we'll really be in need of an additional spot. And I think that it's to do farming at scale, we found that the size of our spaces, which are each space about 2,000 square feet, is a pretty good minimum for like small scale urban agriculture. In terms of making it a space that's easy to manage and worth trying to do things at scale. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many we can link together.
No, sorry. Any kind of guidance you wanted to give to other folks who are getting involved in startups in urban small scale urban farming? Some of the like core lessons you might have learned in approaching materials and reclaiming materials particularly, or how to engage with people who own spaces, just a little bit of like words of caution or advice.
Well, 596 acres has been a really great resource for us, and they put together this really nice toolkit for how to approach city spaces, city-owned spaces, public land. And then if you can get access to that land, the city, in New York at least, has this great set of resources that you can access in terms of timber for beds and soil and mulch. So they've really organized that really nicely. So I would recommend that people check out their website if they're interested. And we field tested a lot of that for them. And then they're working on doing that same thing for private land. And one of the things that we found that was critical for us to get access to our private land was like the promise of making it this green space that would be valued for the community, cleaning it up, insuring it, and ensuring that our operation could be mobile.
Have there been any unintended consequences? This is following in the theme of technology criticism, but what have been the impacts, as you have observed them in developing your systems, of the technology itself? And have there been unintended consequences to putting more technology into the planters?
Into the planters, I don't think so. I mean, we've tried to focus on, we definitely have had brainstorms that I think have been like really technology intensive and would be like really fun art projects, and then have had to like stop ourselves and kind of think about the technology just being a tool to help the farm run, like rather than developing the technology. I think because we have these two software developers who can get are really excited about that, and so it kind of we step back and try to think about how that making that technology.
So other than our continuing conversation with the Farm Hack community and other farmers reaching out to you guys to start articulating some needs, I'm thinking a Farm Hack thread in the forum or the tool page talking about people's ideas and needs would be a really useful next step. But what else are you guys meeting or missing or wanting that our listeners might provide?
I think people to pilot tools in maybe this season or in the fall season would be a nice thing. And then we're also, if people are in the city and want to come out, we are doing a lot of growing and could use extra hands this season.
And so this is coming to the end, so I want to make sure that I give you a chance to offer up any upcoming events or resources that you want to tag. Any thoughts you have while you're thinking about it, I will make sure that everyone hears about Greenhorn's upcoming solstice mixer at the Grain Trail in Keysville, New York this weekend, June 22nd and 23rd. Pork eating, celebrating. Spoken word, we're having a presentation by Eric Andrews at the Vermont Steel Freight Project. Three different bands are playing. It's going to be insane. Check it out on our website, greenhorns.net. Claire, anything from you, resource-wise or event-wise?
That sounds great. We're going to put up a new, our website, we're actually putting up a new website like next week. So I would say check it out, and we have a calendar. We have lots of stuff going on this summer. So that'll be up and up to date next week.
Well, thank you so much, Claire, for coming on to Greenhorns Radio and for all your wonderful work pursuing a really exciting part of experimental agriculture. I look forward so much to the continuing conversation.
Cool. Thanks so much, Simon.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.